This is Becky here. Wreck This Deck is my solo journaling game of deck crafting and demon summoning, and we are in the last couple of days now for the crowdfunding campaign. There is still time, though, for you to pick up a copy, so please head on over to the backer kit link in the show notes if you want to join us. And don't forget, blessed are the deck runners.
Welcome to Black Armada Tales. My name is Josh Fox. My pronouns are he and him. And with me tonight, when she has finished pissing herself laughing, is...
Hello everybody, I'm Becky Anison. I'm going to be playing the Ares playbook. It's going to be Lieutenant Emily Loris, callsign Hellcat, and our pronouns are she and her.
My name's Ed Tomlinson, and I'll be playing Dr. Tobias Roy, or Toby to his friends, the Scorpio playbook. He is a he, him, and so am I.
it's the phrase, he is a he, him. Hi, everyone. I'm Nick Bate. My pronouns are he, him. I'm still playing the Taurus captain/commander/captain Sam Buckley, captain/commander of the Hecate. He, him for him as well.
Hi, everyone. I will be playing Sonia Vega, the Gemini. Her pronouns are she, her. And my name is Sue Elliott, and my pronouns are she, her as well.
If you want to see how much pilots can drink, then you should come out with us tomorrow night.
That's tomorrow night. What about tonight?
I'm busy tonight, and so are you.
Are you going to go for the lunge, the full-on lunge at that point?
No, I'm not. I'm going to walk in, and I'm hoping that somebody sees me walk into your room.
Okay, yeah, so I open the door like a bit
with
more.
With you in a dressing gown.
Yeah, you step in, and I'll shut the door, right?
Yeah, and I think we see, as the door closes, we see one of the bridge staff, who will get a name, watching with a raised eyebrow. Let's make this one of your junior bridge staff, Captain.
Mm-hmm.
How about Michael Coulon?
Sorry, Michael Flatley. Michael Flatley.
Michael Flatley.
When he sees it, he does a little dance down the corridor.
That is not what happens. I think
he always keeps his arms right by his side.
I think this should be an ensign. I think we need some ensigns on board. Ensigns are fun.
Ensign Flatley.
Ensign Michael Coulon. I'm never calling anybody Michael again, though. I'm very upset by that.
I'm just enjoying the fact that both Ed and mine's immediate response was to imagine it as Michael Flatley.
That was very odd.
Probably because we're of a certain age.
I'm pretty sure Irish dancing is a sign of the Korax as well, so you don't want to trust anyone like that.
So my question, I have two questions. First of all, how do I spell Michael's surname? Because it's confusing the heck out of me.
C-O-U-L-O-N.
My second question is, how quickly do I find this out?
So what I'm thinking, if you're thinking you might storm down there.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking I might do something even more dramatic than that.
Ooh, Jesus. Like jettison the entire science wing into space with them both in it.
This could stymie my research, couldn't it?
A little bit. I'm easy. Like, I think the most logical time would be the next morning, first thing, while these two are probably still in the bunk.
That suits me just fine.
Ensign Coulon comes in and, like, says to his immediate closest co-worker, "You'll never guess who I saw going into the doctor's bunk last night." But first, let me explain how the breaking point mechanic works, both for the benefit of anyone who has just triggered it and might be wondering how it works, but also for anybody who's listening to this podcast and might be wondering what the hell I'm talking about. So, very simply, everyone in this game has a 5-point pressure track. You will have heard us talking about marking pressure. You can even erase pressure, though very few people have succeeded in doing so.
bit late after the horse has bolted, really.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's a thing. When your pressure track, there's five boxes, when the fifth box is marked, then your pressure track is full. and it is no longer possible to erase pressure except by taking a breaking point action. You have a limited list of breaking point actions on your character sheet. You can only do each one once, and then it is used and marked off. But once you do a breaking point action, your pressure resets to 2. Not 0, so there's still some mileage having had your breaking point action in doing things like reaching out or letting loose to further reduce your pressure. So, Hellcat, you've just done that. You've just reduced your pressure down to 2.
I don't get any XP for that, do I?
Reach breaking point does not have an asterisk next to it, so no.
That feels like it's a typo, Josh.
No, it's not a typo. I remember that it used to have an asterisk on it, and I think I removed it because it just felt a little bit too disgusting that you could basically just constantly crank the handle of breaking point. The downside of cranking the handle of breaking point, by the way, is that one of the breaking point actions is that you go out of action, probably by dying, and once you have marked off all the other ones, you will have no choice but to do that as your breaking point action.
I do want to be clear to the rest of the players, though, that I'm unlikely to wait until I've marked off all the actions before I choose die as my breaking point action, because I will choose die as my breaking point action at the point that it will cause maximum emotional damage to the rest of the PCs.
So are we framing a scene?
On the bridge.
On the bridge.
Probably shortly after I've overheard Ensign Coulon talking about what he's seen. So I think after he overheard that, the captain himself, quietly pondering and probably quietly fuming, kind of dramatically overthinking. And then at some point the kind of bridge situation I'm picturing here probably owes a little bit more to The Expanse or Battlestar Galactica than it does like Star Trek. I'm thinking, you know, like a central command table that people are likely to stand around. You know, inside the ship, it probably doesn't have a view screen. It's probably got view screens. It doesn't have windows. Buried somewhere safe inside the center. And I think he strides over to the tactical table in the center of the bridge quite purposefully. And he says, Helm, I want to course through the Tenebrium back to the Alexander. Engineering, spin up the jump drives. Battle stations, somebody comms, get me the CAG on the line immediately.
They do that really fucking fast.
Good. And I'm guessing the sirens go off and throughout the ship.
Yeah, you get Katana on the comm real fast, but he sounds kind of groggy. Captain?
Katan, snap 2. We're heading back to the Alexander to pick up that jump fuel immediately. As soon as we drop out of the Tenebrium, I want all of our pilots in the air. I want Marines on ships and on board that fuel ship as quick as possible. Hellcat tells us that the situation is such that we can retrieve the fuel, but there is clearly risk. So we're heading, and we're heading now. Get him in the air, and I'll flick the comm off and make a shipwide announcement to the Hecate. Hecate, this is your captain. We're about to jump straight back to the Alexander to pick up the fuel that we desperately need to survive. Battle stations, you know your jobs. Let's get it done. And then I'm going to order the jump, and I'm taking us back there without discussing it with anyone, without planning it. And I'm expecting all of the pilots, all of them, including Hellcat, in the air now.
How many pilots have you got again?
Half dozen.
That's what I thought.
Yep. Plus, I'm guessing we have pilots who can ferry the Marines over and transport the fuel. So not combat pilots. But just to be clear, this is take foolish action, putting yourself or others in danger without consulting others.
So good. I love this so much, Nick.
Right. I love it. I'd like just like a little snapshot of what each of the other players is doing at the moment that announcement goes off, or like very shortly afterwards, like a reaction shot.
So I think as the announcement comes over the airwaves, there will be two expressions on Hellcat's face which follow very swiftly one after the other. The first one is complete disbelief, like, this is a ridiculous order, what the hell's going on? And then the second, the captain says, I want all pilots ready and in the air now, then she will just jump up.
So did you stay with me? Are you in my quarters?
I think it's way more exciting if I did.
Okay.
Don't you?
So we're like woken up by the alarm call.
Yeah, we're probably woken up by the alarm in a slight state of disarray. Mm-hmm. There'll be a look of confusion and disbelief on my face momentarily, and then I will just leap up. I'm sure that I'm used to leaping up and pulling on my flight stuff pretty fast. So it's like I just go into, it's like I'm a firefighter, the alarm's gone off.
Is your flight stuff near at hand?
Oh, no, no, no. I've got to get my clothes on, run to my flight stuff. But I'm like getting my clothes on, like, you know, like I'm on a mission, because I am on a mission, like, and I'm all business.
Okay. Did you say anything to the doctor before you leave?
Thanks for last night.
Yeah.
Gotta jump in a cockpit now.
Yeah. Good luck. Don't get killed out there.
Don't get killed in here.
But indeed. I sort of go to shake your hand briefly and then pull my hand back.
I'll just nod.
Maybe see you around.
Yeah.
Appropriately awkward. Well, I guess we know what your reaction was, Doctor, but anything you want to add to that?
No, I just look out in the corridor to see what the mayhem is like. And
it's mayhem.
I think I'm going to try and contact the commander on the main ship, which name escapes me.
The Admiral.
The Hecate.
You're on the Hecate. You mean the Agamemnon.
The Agamemnon, yeah. I was going to say Agamemnon and then forgot. But I assume I might not have enough time to do that.
I concur. Yeah, I think you might have the chance to kind of... Basically, the switchboard, they're like, who could I put you through to? And then that horrible crawling feeling, and the ship goes poof, and you don't get to finish the conversation. Vega, where are you when the announcement goes out?
So I imagine that, well, she's probably in her quarters anyway, because it's kind of the morning. I imagine she's advised to kind of just stay out of the way when it's a red alert, because she's just going to get in the way otherwise.
I'm certain that's true. Is that what you're going to do?
She'll probably go out for a wander, won't she? An unscheduled jump?
That's right.
Yeah. I don't think she'll make it very far, though.
Well, you're a military attaché, right? You're not, like, fully civilian. So, and everybody's busy. So, no, I don't think anybody's going to stop you.
I'll probably go to the bridge, I think. I'm making my way to the bridge.
All right. Cool. So, let's get this show on the road. I think the ship jumps back to the coordinates of the Alexander. Now, because you threaded the needle, the Alexander wasn't completely destroyed, right? That was the situation. So it's, although you've done it some pretty terminal damage, there is definitely a wreck there rather than
space dust. Oh yeah, so space dust. My understanding from the move was that I knocked out the bridge, knocked out the engines so they couldn't follow us, because that was the critical thing, but I did it in such a way that all the fuel pods are still intact.
Yeah.
And one of the fuel pods, as I recall from the last episode, the good doctor did manage to jettison one.
No, I don't think he did.
No, I had to make a choice of rescuing you from the hands of a squiggly beast or get a fuel pod.
Yeah, you've done a good half the job, but not enough to actually
disappear. And then lost my sample. I might as well have just done the fuel pod.
I felt bad about that afterwards. I thought you should know.
This is why I ordered the Marines in the air, because they're gonna have to board that ship. I'm sending them in to board the ship to jettison the fuel.
Yes, but there's only one place that they can unlock the fuel pods from, and that is engineering, which is all Korax to the max.
Yeah, so all of this is being conveyed hastily to whoever the Marine commander is on board the ship, so they can draw together a rapid assault plan in the minute and a half I've given them.
Cool. Well, I mean, this isn't that unorthodox a situation. Board a damaged ship.
Plus, also, we've probably got a lot of practice at doing stuff very fast.
I think so. So you jump out into the zone near the Alexander. It is where you thought it would be, roughly. And we haven't given any of the ships call names, and we definitely ought to do that. What's the Viper equivalent called, Loris?
Adder.
Oh, put me on the spot, why not? See, Adder just doesn't sound as cool as Viper, does it?
Grass Snake.
Viper's got a nice plosive in the middle and nice strong two-syllable word.
We've also got a bit of a theme going with the rest of the ship names. Is there anything we could do with...
Oh, yeah.
We've got the Alexander and the Hecate and the Agamemnon.
Is that a theme?
I mean, loosely.
Very loosely, yeah.
Let's call them rapiers then, because I've just decided not to go.
Wing Commander reference. digging it.
Rapiers, that's what you just said.
Yes, and I stand by it.
So 5 rapiers enter the air quite quickly. We get a shot of Hellcat having hastily donned her uniform, getting into her rapier, just a little bit slower than the rest. I think as you're getting into your cockpit, you get a glare from Catan, who's nearby, and just like points out towards the launch bay as his ship shoots out into space. And a couple of shuttle loads of Marines also hot on their heels. Not that hot though, because they're quite slow ships. You can see all this on your screens, I think, Commander. And despite the kind of slightly rushed nature of your announcement, everything seems to be proceeding broadly as you would expect. Your rapiers are out there, they're in formation, watching over the slower progress of these shuttles to land and dock with the Alexander. Vega, I think you're probably going to arrive sometime around about now, and I'm just curious what the manner of your arrival is.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Super green.
Just not through the door, just kick the wall in, make a hole.
Mostly I'm curious as to whether you are trying to sidle in quietly and go unobserved, or whether you are walking in a more confident, I'm meant to be here, aren't I, kind of way. Or maybe there's some other way I haven't thought of, but those are the two ways I had in mind.
Yeah, I was imagining sort of getting a feel for the situation around the periphery as you were to kind of work your way into the centre. But
I thought she might like be tailgating somebody in.
Hmm. Or just bold as brass. Yeah, you're right, Josh, that would be the other option.
Yeah, I think it's more sidling this time, especially if we are we mid-jump at the moment, or is that quite a momentary?
It's momentary, yeah, you've jumped now. You're right, we established earlier that it isn't momentary, there's a kind of an actual transition. So I guess I'm just assuming that for some reason it's taken you that length of time to get up there and we're already out.
Yeah, let's go for sidling then, I think. I really liked the tailgating idea, so I think I do. Someone happens to be going onto the bridge just as I get there, so I kind of just go in quite quickly after them before the doors close.
Always check that people are carrying a pass, people.
Don't hold the door. I think the captain will have, when we came out of the jump and the Alexander was still there and not destroyed, I think he will have allowed himself a smile.
Damn right, that was some fancy flying I did.
Not for that.
Okay, so I guess the scene is fairly calm and quiet. You've got junior bridge staff kind of periodically, but not frantically, relaying information about the progress of these ships towards the Alexander and the situation around you. It feels as though nothing much is going to happen now at Vega and Buckley unless one of you is going to do something. I might cut to...
I just want to note that as part of the breaking point, I must have put people into danger. So something must be going to go wrong. Just bracing everyone.
Don't worry. I'm just giving you a little bit of time for anything else to happen so it can happen in the middle of something. So, yeah, I'll cut to the cockpit of Loris's rapier, I guess, where we can... And also, we have one of those scenes where you, like, cut back and forth between different people's cockpits and there's like no way that they could see each other, but it's as if they're having a conversation face to face.
Yeah.
I think we have Ibarra, Phantom.
Oh no, not her.
Yeah. Hey Hellcat.
What's up, Phantom?
Heard you were out late last night, or should I say in?
Who did you hear that from? Why are they spying on me?
Spying? Hey, it's a free country, it's a free ship. People happen to see things. What I heard is that somebody saw you running from a certain scientific personnel member's room barely dressed. That's what I heard.
Oh, well, that's completely untrue. I was completely dressed.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm detecting a bit of jealousy there, Barra.
Well, I have heard he does calisthenics.
Is that true?
In his pants.
Hmm. That's not going to go down well with Commander, you know.
Can't he hear all this on the comms if you wanted to?
Let's just say it's a private channel.
Let's say no. Yeah, I don't think I'd be saying quite this stuff if it was an open comm channel. say, I don't know what you mean. I'm sure the captain has absolutely no interest in my private life.
Come on, Loris.
Although, you know what? You seem to have an unhealthy interest in my private life.
It's a perfectly healthy interest, I can assure you. But, hey, we're buddies, aren't we? I care about you. I wouldn't want you to do anything ill-advised that would spoil anything, you know, that had been going on for years. Just hypothetically.
Hang on a minute. Is that a Korak ship coming straight for you?
Yeah,
you better keep your eyes on the road.
Very fracking funny.
I'm not interested in this conversation. I'm going to end it.
Okay. Cool. What do you say as you end the conversation?
I don't.
You just switch it off. Fine.
I just switch it off.
Do you go on the bridge, Doctor?
Yeah, I'm going to try and petition the captain, which I know how this is going to go, to let me go back on that flipping ship as originally planned on the previous mission.
Excellent.
So, hang on, are you going to come up to the bridge and say that to...
Yeah.
And what is the manner of your entrance onto the bridge, Doctor?
I can't even watch.
I think I stroll... I think I feel a bit slighted, right? Which is like, I feel personally slighted. Everyone feels personally slighted in this situation. I feel left out of this mission. Previously, we were going to go down together. So I feel I kind of walk up there sort of slightly crossly, but in an attempt to convince the captain to send me down there, basically. Like, I'm just surprised he didn't even think of me.
Okay, but when we see you enter the bridge, what are you doing? Are you breezing in? Are you storming in?
I'm going to try and strut up there confidently, but I think there's so many people coming and going. Like, my thunder gets stolen by all these sort of burly military types coming and going in the bridge. So by the time I get up there, like, the wind is a little bit out of my sails, and I kind of just step up there sort of slowly and say, Captain.
So I think Sam is standing at the tactical table in the center of the bridge, looking down at the kind of unfolding action on the table with his hands clasped behind his back. And he doesn't look up when you say Captain and says, Doctor, we're in the middle of a combat operation. This better be important.
How did this turn from a scientific exploration into a combat operation?
I think Sam says, if you hadn't overslept, you might have been better prepared.
Well, I'm here now. You haven't destroyed anything yet. There's still time to salvage both the fuel pods and the samples which I originally planned to obtain.
What are you proposing, Doctor?
Perhaps you can give me some time to get back onto the ship.
Sam still hasn't looked at you, and he says, you want to go back over to the Alexander?
Well, that is assuming you're going to give me enough time to recover the fuel pods. Remember those, Captain? Or are you intending on blowing the entire ship up? That'll take some explanation, won't it?
Doctor, we're here for the fuel pods.
Excellent.
Flight control, get this man a shuttle. Take him over.
Sir?
Sam just turns and looks at flight control.
Yeah, yes, sir.
I'm flipping surprised by that. I was expecting to have to go rogue and get my own shuttle, but that's fine. I'll go rogues later on.
As you leave the bridge, assuming that's what you do, I think when you're a couple of steps away from the door, without turning around, Sam will just say, good luck, Doctor.
Thank you, Sam.
At that moment, one of the support staff shouts, contact! We have a Korax tendril extruding from the starboard side.
All right, so then Sam says, you better hurry, Doctor.
I nod and rush to the... Look, I know exactly where they are, so I can get them there quicker.
Oh, God.
I also haven't broken pointed, yeah.
Oh, I know. What the heck?
Yeah, we know.
Everyone's being too nice to me.
Oh, you think that's me being nice?
That was not him being nice, Ed. That was him sending you to your death, knowingly.
Vega, you can see all this going off, obviously, from your apparently unnoticed little perch. Yeah, you can see there's a kind of horrible red symbol on the radar showing, denoting the Korax, whatever it is, tentacle, and little red spots starting to come out of it. Just before we cut to the pilots, what's your reaction to all this?
Is the captain sort of in conversation with anyone, or is he just scrutinising something, like, on a display?
I think the crew of the Hecate are at this point well enough drilled that at the moment I don't actually have to be issuing any orders, because everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing. But I'm standing there surveying the situation, and as soon as I feel like I need to intervene, I will. But I don't think I'm, you know, in the middle of shouting things at people and running around like a headless chook. I think I'm probably very still in amongst all of that motion.
I feel like Vega is just seeing this horror show on the screen, and she can't really help herself. Like, she just, the words come out of her, and she just says, "Captain, you can't be serious."
Have you come over to the table in the center of the?
I think I'm rooted to the spot, but I think I just say it loudly enough, and there's like enough sort of everyone's just quietly getting on with their thing, so I just say it sort of quite loudly.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think there's quite a bit of noise on the bridge, but I like the idea that you cut through it a lot, actually. I think Sam turns and looks at you. I can't remember what I called you in our conversation. Was I calling you Ms. Vega? I think I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Sam turns and looks at you, like surprised that you're on the bridge, that you said that. And then he says, "Ms. Vega, since you're here, would you like to join me at the table?"
This throws Sonia. And she walks up to the table, I think, without saying anything, responding.
And as she does so, Sam's view will have swept across the bridge, just to make it clear to everyone that they have jobs to be doing, and so focus. And then when you get there, I think he says in a much quieter voice, so that it's not over the top of everyone, "If you have questions, you better make them quick."
Who gave the order for this mission?
So unlike when he was talking with Roy, we're conversing, I'm looking at you. Mm. He said, "I gave the order. I've given orders like this before. I gave this one."
No, not like this. You just sent the doctor onto that ship.
The doctor asked to go on that ship. It's his job to investigate these things.
You know that's bullshit, right? You see all of this and you send the doctor, our only doctor, into that? What the hell are you doing?
Calling him on his ship?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm doing, Ms. Vega, is getting us back the fuel that we need.
Okay. And that's the line you're sticking with, is it?
Do you want to make a roll?
Yes, let's make a roll. I think you roll
dice. That's the clearest case of call someone on their shit I've ever seen.
I rolled an 8.
Well, what I heard, Sue, was, "So I'm bumping that with 2 pressure."
What is it? Roll plus hard. I don't think I have any hard. Well, I do have a fair amount of pressure to burn, don't I?
Mm.
All right, show off.
Unlike some people I could mention.
Who are about to fly into a ship to their own death just to get some pressure off. I can't
believe you haven't hit your breaking point and you're flying back into that ship, Ed.
Well, I'm assuming that madness is pretty much it.
Let's do that then. So two pressure. Is that right?
Yep, don't forget to mark XP for raising the pressure.
Okay.
And for, isn't call someone on their ship a starred thing as well?
No, because I wouldn't be able to use pressure.
Damn it.
So, that means, you need to, you've told him what his problem is, clearly. What does he need to do to convince you otherwise?
Oh god, this is really hard.
Probably just as simple as, don't, you know, recall that.
Call the doctor back, or,
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, let's go for that then.
Okay. So just, like, you can roleplay out that moment, but just to make sure that we're clear on the mechanical consequences here, because you rolled a 10 plus, when you say to him, you know, whatever you say, either you recall that shuttle or you're a callous murdering bastard, I don't know what you're going to say, Buckley, your options are act to prove Sonia wrong by doing what she's asking you to do, or openly and forcefully refuse to do it and mark pressure.
Yep. Now I have a question. At what stage in this process does my pressure reset?
You've already taken the foolish action or whatever it was, so it's reset to 2.
Okay, great. Okay, so that option is open to me. All right, I'm ready whenever you are, Sue.
I just want to remind you that you spent quite a bit of time earlier telling me how amazing this guy was, how he's going to be our saviour, how he's going to keep us all safe with these amazing discoveries, and now you're sending him on a mission of no return. Like, he's not coming back from that. because he asked to. Make that make sense.
I think Buckley turns away from you and takes that same pose he was in when he was talking to to the doctor before and says, I don't question the doctor's research methods, and I won't have you questioning orders on my bridge. Get off it, or one of my men will take you off.
Sonia just shakes her head and turns and leaves the bridge.
You can come and get on the shuttle with me just to, to document my adventures.
It's rubbish here. I'm getting on the shuttle.
A number of bridge staff were watching that. Although as soon as the captain so much as looks and glances in their direction, they're like studiously returned to what they were doing. But the altercation there was noted. Okay, I want to cut to space. We can see the Hecate, big gunship bristling with weapons, and the rapiers spread out, and this massive black tentacle rhymed with red streaks running down it like veins. And from inside this thing are smaller ships are popping out, heading in the direction of your rapiers. We are going to start a battle clock. Very exciting. I'll just explain very quickly how this works. We're having a battle, space battle. That means there's going to be stuff going on, ships fighting, big and small guns going off on the big ships, and we don't track every moment of it because this is not a war game. What we do is we focus in on the individual actions of the PCs, in particular the ones who are actually in a fighter or in the bridge. But every so often I will tick off a segment from a 4-segment clock, the battle clock, and every time I do that, it will inflict some harm on the fleet in the form of attrition. If the clock ever fills, then we will start a new clock, and every segment on that will knock off 2 attrition. When the fleet attrition gets up to 5, some severe damage is done to something important. So if you ever get round to the second clock, you're potentially inflicting quite a lot of bad shit on the fleet. I will also note that people who are non-combatants, obviously you can do whatever you want while a battle's going on, and you could be engaged in interesting actions yourselves, but you are also able to take a move called Wait Helplessly, which allows you to mark pressure to give somebody else a bonus to their roles if you describe how you are basically managing your stress at not being able to do anything. Yeah, say what you're doing to cope, mark 2 pressure to give them +1 to their role.
Thanks for listening. We've been playing Last Fleet by me, Josh Fox. You can find links to Last Fleet and all of the rest of our stuff in the show notes. And don't forget that Becky's game Wreck This Deck is currently crowdfunding on BackerKit, and there's a link to that in the show notes also. See you next time.
Have you been lifting heavy again?
No, well, I've done something to my leg, which is fun.
What?
I don't know. So I think I've like, I think I might have twinged a nerve because I've had like, oof, it's quite weird pain in my left arse cheek today.
That sounds like sciatica.
Yeah, well, my foot has sort of started hurting as well. And you know, when it's like, I feel like these two things are linked. So I feel like I've done something to my sciatic nerve. Probably from deadlifts.
Lifting heavy. I think you should try just taking magnesium. That's my answer to everything nerve related. I always think if there's something goes wrong with my nerves, I have a big bottle of magnesium up there, and if something goes weird with my nerves, I just...
Have a banana. Oh no, that's cramps.
No, it's potassium.
Have a banana.
I would like a banana, actually.
Oh yeah, me too. Anyone got bananas?
I've got 2. They're quite brown though, so they are destined for banana bread.
Yeah.
Along with the other 20.
Do you actually do that though? Because we have some and they're there, and then the fruit flies come and live there for a couple of days. And
no, what I do, Ed, is what you should do, is that I put them in the freezer, and then at some point I forget about them. And then Josh says,
Why are there so many bananas in the fridge? I can't fit anything else in.
Freezer, not the fridge, the freezer.
Freezer.
And then I say, oh, I'm going to make some smoothies and stuff with them. And then eventually I realise there's like 30 bananas in there.
And then what do you do? Because you can't make banana bread with 30 bananas. So
no.
And yet I feel the freezer is not currently full of bananas. So you must have done something.
So there's a really good reason for that. Do you remember when we had to replace our fridge freezer?
Too many bananas.
They're still in there.
Because it broke.
Break our freezer with bananas?
No, I didn't break the freezer with bananas. The fridge freezer was very old and it broke. And we replaced it with the nice new silvery one that's there now.
Yeah.
But because the freezer like became unreliable, we had to chuck out everything in the freezer because it wasn't clear if things had like defrosted and blah, 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 and then refrozen and all of that sort of thing.
We could have got banana poisoning.
And so I got rid of over 30 bananas at that point.
Was it genuinely over 30 bananas?
I am not prepared to say how many it was, only that it was definitely over 30.
Oh, that's a lot of bananas.
You could have given them to Nick and Sue. At this right now, you could have funneled them down there.
So we have the children, we have the child problem that you presumably have, Ed. So like what happens, Athena...
What, we've got some.
Yeah. Oh. Athena will say to me, oh, I love bananas, Mummy. Can I have a banana? Can I have a banana? And I've only got like one banana. And I say, oh, well, okay, fine, have the banana. And then I say, okay, I'm doing the shop this week. Does anybody want anything? And then he says, I want bananas. I love bananas. I want bananas. And I'm like, okay, right, fine. Okay, I'll buy some bananas. And then she won't eat them.
Yep.
Yeah, you just shouldn't pay any attention to anything Athena says, because she never eats anything she says she's going to eat.
Except for yogurts.
Yeah, okay.
And at one time, bananas.
Yeah, we've got one banana eater and one non-banana hater. So
we have two banana haters and two people who like to have banana occasionally. And that's me and Athena. But at one point, she tricked me into thinking she wanted to eat bananas all the time. And I
bought 30 bananas.
Just in case.
Froze them all.
Like, so I want to be clear. I didn't just go out and buy 30 bananas in one go. I would buy like a pack of five.
Here's your fucking bananas.
Well, you know, you can like break them off and just take two, right? You can just take two and think, hey, I'm probably only going to use two.
Five, and then she'd eat two. And then I'd eat one, and then we'd have two left. And then I'd put them in the fridge. And then the next week I'd buy five, and she'd eat one, and I'd eat one, and then I'd put three in the freezer. And then then the next week I'd buy five, and she'd eat seven.
This sounds like a maths question.
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
I think you'd take the fox first.
It follows that it took you at least 3 months to work out this problem. And in that 3 months, like, you put two bananas a week into the freezer without noticing.
No, because it wasn't consistent, because some weeks she would eat far more bananas than I had bought, and I'd have to go out and buy top-up bananas.
It's not,
if it was consistent, it would be predictable and it would be easy.
When you only bought five, you must have gone into negative bananas.
Well, no, I went over the road and bought two
more. She went into quantitative easing. Yeah.
When she was hungry for bananas, there was no stopping her.
She was in a frenzy.
She would have burned down the house if she didn't have a banana.
That's the amazing thing about children, is that they will sort of go through this sine wave thing where when they're at the top of it, they just consume all matter in the universe. And you're sitting there going, how?
Wow. You had to limit Raffi to four apples, no more than four apples a day. Otherwise, he will eat an unlimited amount of apples and give himself stomach pain.
Yeah, and then he'd be like, oh, I don't feel very well.
No, it's like, well, you shouldn't have eaten 10 apples in, should you? In a day. It's very hard. I find it very... Catering for children is difficult. It's like, there's only two constants in Athena's life, peanut butter and yogurt.
Okay, well, we've got one that likes smooth and one that likes crunchy.
One of them is in my will and one of them isn't.
So the one that likes crunchy, are they also the one that doesn't like bananas?
One likes crunchy. No. Yes. The one that likes crunchy doesn't like bananas.
Okay. They are the best child. The other child is the bad child.
We are a crunchy peanut butter only household.
Hmm. Yeah.
How does that sit with you, Ed?
Yeah, I don't see the point of smooth. What is the point of this?
It's just a paste that sticks to the roof of your mouth and
absolutely.
You can't get it off.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny feeding it to dogs, though.
That's true.
If you're making a film where they're talking dogs, then it's quite effective. That's the way you do it. That's a movie secret right there for you.
Ed facts.
Ed facts.
Ed facts.
There you go, job done.